Well, hello there, listeners, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 461 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a listener-supported show about eco-friendly and intentional living. On today's show, we are discussing spotting greenwashing 2.0. So we discussed greenwashing an awful lot on this show, but this is the advanced tips, perhaps, for seasoned listeners. I've linked to the 1.0 episodes in this week's show notes if you need to go back and get a refresher. But I just want to say that greenwashing is becoming savvier, sneakier, and more prevalent, especially as consumers care more and more about the planet and climate change. And so to meet the demand for green products, companies, unfortunately, by and large, are not changing their manufacturing and business practices. They're changing their marketing. And so the greenwashing conversation, it's not a one and done conversation, is it? We need to constantly and consistently have the conversation and constantly and consistently revamp our efforts as consumers to not be duped by the ridiculous amounts of greenwash products out there. So here to help me tackle greenwashing 2.0 is Aiden Real. Aiden is a business owner who has created an online shop for eco-friendly products. He has done the heavy lifting, the hard work of vetting the products that are actually eco-friendly from the brands that are actually eco-friendly. Aiden, so thrilled to have you on the show today. How are you?
I'm doing so well. Thanks for having me.
Well, why don't we start by you telling us about you? Who are you? What do you do? And how did you find yourself starting an online store featuring products that are actually eco-friendly and are not greenwashed?
I went into college to study economics and make some type of good environmental social impact. I knew that all businesses were about solving problems. And I knew that the problem that was never out of sight and out of mind for me was plastic pollution, right? Like, why aren't more people shopping sustainably? And the obvious answer is it's just so expensive. People were so frustrated with how expensive sustainable products were. So I was like, okay, I'm going to build the world's most affordable eco store. I see how that works. With this industry, where the number one issue that people are having is the high cost of sustainable products, and that sustainable products on average cost 80% more than the conventional alternative. People want to shop sustainably, but they can't. That was the issue I wanted to tackle.
You said something there that I want to talk about. You said that businesses are created to solve problems. And that sounds great. And I've never taken a business class in my life. Maybe that's what they teach you in the intro to business class. I have no idea. But it seems to me as a consumer, that's actually not why businesses are created, right? Businesses are actually created to make money. And to make money, they create problems that we actually don't have to sell us products that we actually don't need.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir. Businesses should be the positive change makers in society, not the opposite, which they so often are today. Yeah, businesses are there to make a profit, and they're going to do whatever they can to make that profit for their stakeholders, which aren't the consumers. A lot of corporations are hopping on the bandwagon of sustainability, not because it's the right thing to do, but because they have their data analysts run tests, and that's going to make them the most money, which is sad. But that's the world we live in today.
Great intro. Thank you. You set me up perfectly, Aiden, to talk about greenwashing. It is rampant. And yeah, we've covered greenwashing on the show before. So this is a greenwashing 2.0 show, listeners, because even I get tripped up, to be frank. Even my husband, just the other day, he went to a mom and pop shop, an ethnic store, for a couple groceries that we needed. And he came home and he said, Stephanie, I got to show you this bag. They bagged my groceries in this special recyclable bio bag. And so I said, bring that over. Let me look at that. Because I am quite suspicious of any claims of being eco-friendly, especially if it's a single-use disposable product. But yeah, so okay, I'm looking at this bio bag. It says it's biodegradable, easily recyclable, made of recycled plastic. It's green color. So the plastic bag is dyed green.
I love to do that.
They
which
do.
Makes it unrecyclable.
Yeah, I love that. But on closer inspection, this bag is only made of 60% recycled content, which means, if my math is correct, 40% of the bag is made from virgin plastic. So I'm not sure what's bio about this. And then it cannot be recycled normally, if it can be recycled at all. You aptly made the point about the green color. You have to go to a special website to properly recycle this bag. It makes it sound like in the big letters, you can just throw it in your recycle bin and everything's good. But no, if you read the fine print, you got to go to their website to get the instructions on how to recycle it appropriately. I reached out to this website. That was 4 days ago. I'm still waiting on a response from an actual human. So I say all that to say, listeners, my husband and me, like, we're fairly well versed in the greenwashing problem, but even we get tripped up. It's a minefield out there. So talk to me about how you source products that are actually not greenwashed. Like, how do you do that? What do you look for? What's a big red stop sign? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, good question. That's obviously one we get asked a lot. We do just a ton of back-end research on finding the most affordable product without sacrificing those certain social environmental criterion. But first off, is this eco-friendly company owned by a bigger conglomerate, right? So like Burt's Bees, The Honest Company, Seventh Generations, they're owned by Unilever, Procter & Gamble. Is this one product that's eco-friendly out of their entire product line? And is this some type of branding exercise? Do they see it as a branding exercise rather than a real initiative? Do they have give back programs? Because that puts money where their mouth is. They're not saying that they're just a good company trying to be sustainable. They're actually like donating a portion of their profits to nonprofits. And then there's accredited third-party certifications. There's a lot of like labels out there that are just totally made up and fake. You could go to ecolabelindex.com if you are curious about any labels you have. But yeah, are they a B certified corporation, which means they're legally obliged to maintain certain criteria and social criteria? Or are they like part of 1% for the planet? What you're talking about earlier with bio bag, it made me think of Kim Kardashian's brand Skims, where on the packaging, it says this is like a compostable package that can be composted at your home or at a municipal composting facility. And then you see on the other side, it has like a triangle with a 4 in the middle saying that it's a type 4 plastic bag. And it's just crazy what these companies think they can get away with today. Keurig just got sued for saying a lot of their pods were recyclable, when it's the same deal. You have to go to a website or go to a special facility where they can recycle these pods. It's putting a lot of burden on the consumer, which we like to do with everything in America. And so it's unfortunate. Obviously, you want to go into the supermarket, you want to get something safe for your kids and for the planet, and you don't have all day. You just got off your shift and you want to go make dinner. So it's such a problem today, and there's not enough regulation.
Thank you for those examples. And I'm going to ask for more in a minute, but you make a good point, which is that the average consumer, heck, me, if I go to the store or if I'm on the internet, I do not have all day to research whatever I need. I just don't. And especially if I'm in the store, I'm looking at the packaging. The words that are in big print are the ones that are going to jump out at me. But recyclable, compostable, biodegradable, those should not be flexes, in my opinion, because just because something technically could be composted does not mean it's easily compostable. Same with recyclable. Just because it could be recyclable, theoretically, in a perfect world, doesn't mean in our broken recycling system, it's actually going to be recycled. So those terms don't matter. Now, speaking of biodegradable, that seems to be the catch-all. Like, it says bio in it. That sounds good. And then we've got degradable, which also sounds great. But biodegradable means nothing. Can you speak more on that buzzword?
In the US, there's no legal definition for a lot of these green words. In mid-January of last year, the EU, they're just fully banning these words unless you have reasonable evidence to support it. And reasonable evidence does not mean you're doing carbon offsets. Like, you can't use that as evidence because there's so many issues with carbon offsets. Obviously, like, the biggest one is just you're like polluting carbon today, but like in 100 years, then you can sequester most of it if everything's done right. But yeah, they're branding exercises, no legal definition.
Branding exercises with no legal definition. So we're going to get in a minute to like how we can look beyond, as consumers, how we can look beyond these branding exercises. But let's say I need a product and I want to do, you know, the eco-friendly thing. I have a couple extra dollars to spend. I want to buy a better product from a brand that actually cares as opposed to pretending to care. How would I do it? Is it as easy as going to Google and typing in eco-friendly whatever, eco-friendly poop bag for my dog? And I'll use that as an example, but I'll just say, listeners, tip number one is if you're buying a single-use product like a poop bag for your dogs, see if you can not buy the product, because it doesn't matter what's going into the manufacturing of the product. If it's a single-use item, it's not ever going to be eco-friendly. So what are your thoughts on going to Google and just typing in eco-friendly poop bag or eco-friendly whatever?
Yeah, first thing I want to mention is if you can, you guys probably get told this all the time, but if you cannot buy something, don't buy it. It's funny like hearing that from a business person. But yeah, if you can DIY, if you can do something else, borrow, thrift, obviously those are all better. The best thing is just to shop, look up zero waste, plastic free, eco-friendly stores, yeah, and find a respectable company to buy from. But it's so complicated though, too, because like, oftentimes the profit margins can be larger. It's called the green premium. In Bill Gates' book, How We Avoid a Climate Crisis, he says that the number one thing he wants people to take away from the book is that like the green premium is such a problem. And if people listening don't know what the green premium is, it's pretty much just how much more that eco-friendly product costs or eco-friendly service, whatever, how much more it costs than the conventional un-eco-friendly one. And it's sad because when you go to the store and you see a $1 bottle of shampoo, it's really hard to make that sustainable product much more affordable to meet a $1. But like $1 product like shouldn't exist. Like a $1 bottle of shampoo, it has to come at the expense of some exploitation, whether that be the people or the planet. And corporations aren't paying for all the negative externalities they're causing. So if like that plastic bottle is hurting coral reefs, let's say, we don't have like monetary value on coral reefs, and we don't know how much that plastic bottle is destroying coral reefs. So like companies aren't paying for that cost. And that's why they're able to make their products so cheap. We really shouldn't just be living in a society where those are options. So in my head, this option shouldn't even exist in the first place. These sustainable products should actually only be our options. And this is how much a product should cost. I know it's more expensive, but that's literally just how much it should cost. It's really hard to break people out of a habit. So it's just like breaking out of a habit, finding a good couple of sustainable products that you like. And then what I do is I just always buy those products over and over again. So like I go to the store and I don't need to like do further research or like do like brand research. I've bought this product, I've done research on it before. So I could get the same thing so over and over.
Yeah, great. A couple great points there. The first is you mentioned that a $1 bottle of shampoo should not exist, because even just making the plastic bottle probably likely costs more than $1, let alone the actual shampoo that is the product. That statement reminds me of a similar statement that a recent guest made, Corinne Irby. We were discussing supporting local food systems. So supporting your local farmer, your local growers, maybe you even grow yourself. Like, why should we do that? And her comment, listeners, if you heard it, was that the food in the supermarket is too cheap. It's not that local organically grown food is too expensive. It's that the supermarket prices are too cheap. And so they've skewed consumers into thinking the grocery store price is the right and fair price, but that's not the case. And a second point you made too that I wanted to just highlight was do your research on the front end, find the products that you like, that you love, not that you like, you have to love them, right? They have to be just as good or better than the conventional product. So find the eco-conscious products from eco-conscious sellers. love them, and then just buy them over and over. That's when it gets easy. The hard part is finding the products, I would say. The easy part is just buying them over and over. So I say that to listeners who, you know they've got to take some inventory of the stuff that they regularly buy, maybe their household products, and they don't want to do it because it's a lot of work. Yeah, at the upfront, it's a lot of work. But once you find what you love, it's easy breezy, easy sailing. So Aiden, we're going to take our sponsor break. But when we come back, I want to talk about some more tips. I know you got a bunch of them. So we'll do that after a quick sponsor break. If you've been paying attention, you've likely heard something about gut health and why zoning in on your gut health is so darn important. You need EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense. It's a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense because I have a bloating problem, friends. Yes, I do. Inflammation is not my friend. Since taking one capsule a day on an empty stomach with water, I have noticed more energy, improved skin, and here's the big one, reduced bloating. Head to myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Nothing nurtures the world above better than the soil below, and that's why I am so excited to introduce you to Coast of Maine. Coast of Maine is an organic soil brand that offers a full range of products designed to cover all of your garden and lawn needs. In years past, my vegetable garden, I neglected the soil and I didn't have much yield. If your soil lacks appropriate nutrients for success, your garden may not succeed. And so this year, I am so excited to cultivate the soil before planting the plants with Coast of Maine's organic products. Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. So next time you're at your local retailer, look for Coast of Maine products. Get growing. Visit coastofmaine.com to find a local retailer near you. Coastofmaine.com. Listeners, I'm going to be 40 next month. Oh my goodness. And even though there's a big part of me that wants to buy into the anti-aging claims of all the products, I am, of course, quite skeptical. I recently just discovered a brand called Lima, and it is changing the game when it comes to caring for your skin. It is science-based. The Lima laser is the most powerful clinic-grade cosmetic laser device, and it's the only laser that's FDA cleared for at-home use. I am so excited to try the Lima laser on my wrinkles, and you know I'll be reporting back. Visit lima.life, that's LYMA.life, and learn more about the Lima laser. If you're interested in trying one, you can sign up for their newsletter. Tell them that Sustainable Minimalist sent you and let me know how it goes for you. That's lyma.life. And we're back. Today I'm speaking with Aiden Real. He is the founder and CEO over at ecoternatives.co. And we're talking about greenwashing today. I feel like this is a topic that this podcast needs to constantly and consistently revisit precisely because companies keep changing their marketing tactics. They keep greenwashing in new and inventive ways to trick us. Before the break, Aiden, we discussed biodegradable means nothing. Compostable does not mean it will be composted. Recyclable doesn't mean it will be actually recycled. It likely won't if you are aware of recent recycling statistics here in the United States. But I want to talk to you about a couple other words that the average listener may not know what they mean. Let's talk about pre-consumer and post-consumer recycled plastic. What on earth do these terms mean? It seems to me that the confusion around these terms is greenwashing personified. So take it away.
So there's a lot to be said about plastic. A lot of companies are saying their products are made with 100% recycled plastic now. What does that mean? Hopefully it's made with 100% post-consumer recycled plastic, because that means the plastic has gone through the entire life cycle. It's been in the hands of the consumer, and then the company is taking it and then using it to make new products. The problem with that, it sounds great and it is pretty good. You can only do that like once or twice before the plastic loses its structural integrity and has to be made into something different and something we don't use every day maybe. And so it's not the best solution. But and then there's pre-consumer plastic, which is cheaper and shortcut, but companies like to use it because it's just cheaper. And what that means is the plastic might not have even left the manufacturing facility before it's being used again. Imagine there's a big, like a sheet of plastic, and a company is taking cookie cutter pieces out of it. And so what's left, if they take that and they melt it down and use it again, that's pre-consumer plastic. And then also, I know we're talking about like, there's not a lot of legal definitions to these green buzzwords. Just because a product says recycled on it, like you never know how much recycled content is in there, whether that be plastic or like something in clothing, like made with bamboo. Like it could be made with just a few percent of bamboo.
So when it comes to pre-consumer versus post-consumer recycled plastic, if the consumer had a choice, what should we choose?
Yeah, I'd say post-consumer plastic is better for sure.
Okay. But again, listeners, post-consumer plastic, pre-consumer plastic, like you can't recycle it indefinitely, I think is what you're saying. You've only got what, 2, 3, maybe up to 5 reuses. And then guess where it goes? Hopefully, if we're lucky, it goes to the landfill, but it might just go to the ocean. Okay, so I would love it if you discussed the controversy, and it is a controversy around PVA, especially in laundry sheets and pods, but also dishwasher pods. They say they're plastic free, but guess what, everybody? PVA is a plastic. Yeah, maybe it dissolves, maybe it doesn't. Still, nobody knows.
There's so much controversy with that today, and companies like Blue Land, for example, that makes PVA free, like cleaning products. They're like sponsoring research to try to show that PVA is really harmful because it doesn't entirely dissolve. In the perfect environment, it dissolves just like sugar would, but it needs really specific waste management resources. From what I've read, it's not perfect. So there is PVA detected in people's bodies today. And the EPA, they'll always say like, oh, it's in such small amounts that it shouldn't affect us. We have so many chemicals in our bodies today, all at minute amounts. So we live in America where companies can introduce any chemicals into the marketplace and they don't need to remove them until it's innocent until proven guilty, right? And I know you've already talked about this in your podcast, but it's just crazy to me that we can be so certain that like all these chemicals like PVAs in our body isn't harmful when it's really hard to create a causal link between like PVA and someone's body and the short-term or long-term effects they get from it. It's almost impossible because there's so many confounding variables. Personally, I like to limit my exposure because I don't know. And we've been wrong about things like this in the past, countless times. It's the tale as old as time.
Well, I'll just say to the PVA problem, yes, it's lovely that Blue Land is sponsoring this research. However, Blue Land is also trying to get their products purchased as opposed to the PVA one. So of course they would sponsor research to find that PVA isn't as eco-friendly as we'd like to think because they want people to buy their Blue Land products. So, all right, this is the Greenwashing 2.0 episode, listeners. So what other ways can we avoid greenwashing? And I want to talk here about pledges. Whenever I go to so a greenwashing 1.0 tip that I offer listeners is to go to the company or corporation's website and do a deep dive. Do they just mention sustainability like on one page, like really quick? How much information do they give? Do they give back? Do they have any third-party certifications? Those are all greenwashing 1.0 suggestions. But in terms of greenwashing 2.0 suggestions, I want to talk about the pledges and the plans and the we're going to be carbon neutral by 2030. 2030 is a big round numbered year. Do pledges mean anything?
Great question. Companies can make pledges and there's no repercussions if they don't achieve those pledges. Like, same with governments. They can try to reduce carbon emissions or they can say whatever they want and they don't need to actually attain that. There's no consequences.
I see a lot of pledges and it remains to be seen whether these pledges are met or not. But if we look at countries and their pledges as our guiding light, countries miss their pledges all the time, especially with regard to the Paris Agreement. Countries pledged up the wazoo what they were going to do to reduce carbon emissions. I think two countries did it. I guess my point here is if there's no legality behind it, if there's no binding clause to a pledge, it's greenwashing.
No, I just completely agree. It's a tragedy of the commons. It's like when there's a shared resource like the earth, you always just hope it's like dishes. If you grew up with siblings and like someone has to unload the dishes, you're just hoping that your sister will or like your older brother will so your mom doesn't get in, you know? So that's what tragedy of the commons is. There was this milk company put in big letters like carbon positive by whatever date. I don't think they understood what carbon positive means. Carbon negative is actually a good thing that you want to be doing. But that's just a funny example.
Oh my gosh. All right. So are there any tools to help us? And when I ask about tools, I specifically want to know about tools that are changing with the greenwashing times. Because these marketing execs at polluting companies that truly don't care, like they're savvy and they're changing the packaging and they're changing the semantics, and they're changing all of it to continue to hit that green subset of consumers. And so do you have any apps or websites or resources that have their finger on the pulse and are also changing their recommendations with the times?
Yeah, I do. And obviously, we're not affiliated with this in any way, but good on you. It's a sustainability grading app for fashion brands. Think Dirty. It's an app that helps you find about potentially toxic ingredients in personal care and makeup products. Then there's EWG, Healthy Living. You can scan barcodes in the supermarket, and it streamlines that research that we were talking about before. And then there's also a lot of companies I try to have as suppliers or B certified corporations. That just means it meets certain social environmental criteria. Just because a company isn't B certified doesn't mean, or doesn't have certain certifications, doesn't mean it's not sustainable or not giving back. Usually these certifications come with like annual audits that cost money. For a lot of small businesses, they're not quite worth it. But yeah, I want to leave you with those tools to use.
Thank you so much. And I just want to also say too, with the rise of influencer marketing, for listeners who you're on social media, you see an influencer peddling this product and they're talking about the product's eco-friendly claims. I would just say that all can be greenwashed as well, especially if the influencer is not sustainability minded. Like, are they a mom influencer and don't talk about sustainability ever, and then here comes this product and then they start talking about it? That's another greenwashing 2.0 tip, right? Like, if the influencer does not have skin in the sustainability game and then starts spewing some product's eco-friendliness, like, that should be a red flag. I would also say too, if you see an influencer saying this, that, or the other thing, how environmentally friendly this product is, ask yourself, is what they're saying heartfelt or does it sound like marketing copy? Because influencers get marketing copy. And if they really like a product, they're going to say it in their own words. They're not going to read the marketing copy. And I would also say too, don't take an influencer's word for it, right? Read reviews of the product, especially read the 1-star reviews, because there might, and there very well be, some consistent flaws that jump out. So I just say that all too, because as more and more consumers become aware of our environmental woes, and as more consumers then try to vote with their dollars, the greenwashing's not going anywhere. In fact, it's only going to get sneakier.
with the rising tide of eco-conscious consumers, companies are going to try to make their products more eco-friendly. And it's your burden to figure out which ones are doing it for the right reasons.
They're going to try to make their products sound more eco-friendly. Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, it's the consumer's burden to try and sift through the noise. Aiden, tell us where we can find more of you and Ecoternatives online.
Yeah, ecoternatives.co. How you spell that is eco and then alternatives, but without the A and the L. That's the same handle for our Instagram and our TikTok. Right now, we just make videos on TikTok, and that's how we're getting a lot of our attention.
Okay, well, I hope TikTok doesn't get banned in the US because that's trouble for you. But thank you so much, Aiden. This was a wonderful conversation. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listeners, that's a wrap, my friends. Show notes at mamaminimalist.com/461. If you love the show, if you love the work, if you think the work is worth continuing, please consider supporting the show with $5 a month. We're at about, 65-ish subscribers. The goal is 100. So if you have $5 a month and you love the show, if you love the work, if you think it's important, I would love it if you considered subscribing. Thank you so much. I'm not going to lock you into a subscription and keep you there. If you end up hating it, I'll give you your money back. This is not that serious. I'm not a predatory business. I'm a single person talking in a microphone who wants to make the world a better place. We do have an eco tip today, and it comes from listener Melissa. Melissa said she listened to my recent episode for National Gardening Day with Corrine Irby, and she said that she is successfully growing some produce items without a lot of sunlight. She said these items need about 5 hours of sunlight. Beets, alpine and regular strawberries, low bush blueberries, fall raspberries, kale, cold hardy lettuces, chive, thyme, parsley, and asparagus. Oh my goodness. Melissa, I need to come over and see your growing efforts. All those, Melissa's experimenting with growing in less light, and she's having success. Melissa also said that her library has a seed library, which is a great way to get some seeds for free so that you can experiment for free. She coordinated a drop-off of bulk compost with her neighbor to avoid those plastic bags. And so I love what you're doing, Melissa. And I really like your attitude, which is all about experimentation. I find that in my own growing journey, by the way, you should see my sunroom right now. It is covered. Like every surface is covered in grow lights and seedlings. I find that for me, I put a lot of effort and time and a lot of care, and I get really invested in the garden and in growing. And so when it doesn't turn out well, I feel really darn bad, right? I wasted money, I wasted time, I wasted effort. However, this year, my daughter and I, especially my older daughter, Ani, she's 10, she's really into growing. We have looked at the gardening season more of, as you did, Melissa, as an experiment, right? Like, let's try some things. Let's see if it works. If it works, great. If it doesn't, hey, we still learn something. I mentioned how I have a hydroponic indoor growing system, and maybe a month ago, we decided to harvest an entire head of lettuce. So we cut the head of lettuce off at the base, and we ate it. It was lovely. And my daughter said, you know what? Why don't we keep that base with all the roots? Why don't we just put it in some water with a little bit of food and see what happens? Just an experiment, right? Like maybe something will happen, but probably something won't happen. Let's try. And I thought to myself, you know what, Ani? Yeah, let's try it. We'll learn something either way. So we put this base in water that had plant food in it, and wouldn't you know, it started sprouting leaves again. So we will get now 2 full heads of lettuce out of this one seed that we planted in a couple months, which is awesome. An experiment gone right. Because remember, it's an experiment. And if it goes right, you get food. Woohoo. If it goes wrong, you learn something. You added to your knowledge base. So thank you so much, Melissa, for those tips. Listeners, I promise you here and now on Thursday, the pesticide episode will be out. You do not want to miss it. That's Thursday. I am shouting from the rooftops. That Thursday is pesticides episode. Do not miss it. I will see you then. Reach out if you need me and take care.